Sometimes this job can give me whiplash. One day, we were discussing the favorite ice cream flavor of beloved Penn State football coach Joe Paterno.
As far as I know, you know, he comes in and he does eat all kinds of ice cream, but I believe that strawberry is his favorite kind.
And then, beginning in November of 2011, when Paterno's former assistant coach Jerry Sandusky was arrested for child sex abuse, people I respect, smart men like Charlie Pierce, Pat Forty, and Dan Wetzel, started rewriting Paterno's legacy on this very radio show.
There is nothing here except the rape of children. There's nothing else. There's nothing else to talk about.
He had a remarkable run of doing great things, but it was in his building and on his watch.
They knew that Sandusky had a problem here, and they did nothing to stop him. Nobody cared.
In July of 2012, the statue of Joe Paterno was removed from outside Beaver Stadium. But now a new poll suggests that 59% of Pennsylvanians want to see the statue returned. Only 25% oppose. And it got me wondering, was this change of heart inspired by a deeper understanding of what Paterno did wrong? Or do people just want their hero back?
I think it's a little bit of both. There's a lot of minutiae associated with this question, what do we do about Paterno now?
That's Dr. Joel Nathan Rosen. He's an associate professor of sociology at Moravian College in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And with partners David C. Ogden and Maureen M. Smith, Rosen is nearly four-fifths of the way through his planned five-volume anthology on sport and reputation.
We're starting to remember now, collectively, I suppose, that Paterno used to be a good guy. We used to love Paterno. He was the embodiment of the genteel coach.
Last month, Penn State President Eric Bannon told the Associated Press that he's not a fan of the Free Report, which had been commissioned by the university and found Paterno culpable. The NCAA has returned the 112 wins they had magically wiped from Paterno and Penn State's record books. It's as if Paterno's legacy has been rewritten not just once, but twice. Which reminded me of another sports figure.
Say it ain't so, Joe. Say it ain't so.
That's the movie Eight Men Out, and Joe is Shoeless Joe Jackson. The nation was crushed when Shoeless Joe and the rest of the Chicago Black Sox were banned from baseball for throwing the 1919 World Series. But by the time Ray Kinsella was plowing under his fictional corn to build a baseball diamond in Field of Dreams, the narrative had changed.
I mean, if he's supposed to be throwing, how do you explain the fact that he hit 375 for the series and didn't commit one error, huh?
I think the Joe Jackson comparison is an apt one. It's funny, though, but I've been thinking in a totally different direction. Maybe this is the nature of my work. I can't stop thinking about Michael Vick in this situation.
So Rosen's not trying to compare the sexual abuse of children to dogfighting. But after serving 21 months in a federal prison, Vick showed contrition, returned to the NFL, and he's been really well-behaved ever since. And Rosen says it hasn't helped.
It's funny to me that Michael Vick continues to be regarded with such scorn. I mean, I've had people come and just tell me that they will never be able to forgive him for the wrongs he's done.
It's been 68 years since Jackie Robinson integrated baseball, but Rosen says there's still a color line in sports, not in who we allow on the field, but
some people, by virtue of their ethnic background, are afforded the opportunity to revise their reputations.
Sports figures who don't fit society's mental image of who and what a sports figure should be, Rosen says they're more likely to hear,
"Yeah, we knew something was wrong, we just couldn't put our finger on it until they stumbled."
So take a black quarterback like Michael Vick.
His abilities were being questioned right from the get-go. Even when he was still in Atlanta, his victories were always tainted with the sense of, yeah, well, you know, he's got great skills, but is he a real quarterback? You know, we always knew there was something wrong with him. Now that we know, we're never going to lose that.
Tiger?
No one has fallen further than Tiger Woods. I remember being awestruck when Nike released this commercial of a contrite Woods staring into the camera while a recording of his deceased father challenged him.
And did you learn anything?
Why do we ask that of Tiger when we didn't ask that of others?
Because Tiger Woods committed the ultimate sin, which is the same sin that the Williams sisters have committed. Tennis and golf are the last bastion of that level of privilege. And when you see somebody that looks like Tiger Woods completely overrunning the sport, it's discomforting to a great number of Americans, quite frankly. When the Tiger Woods saga was at its zenith, Ben Roethlisberger was also finding himself at the wrong end of that particular discussion.
But here's the difference, Rosen says. Tiger Woods cheated on his wife. Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger was accused of rape. It was a big deal at the time, but commentators soon forgot. And no one suggested that Roethlisberger was representative of athletes who try to take advantage of drunk college students. But there were those who suggested that Woods was somehow proof that black men cheat on their wives.
The thud, the sound of him falling from the skies as his wings were snatched from him, was extraordinary. And I think that sound right there is what sort of gave me whiplash during the time.
Woods is 39 years old now. He's got a bad back and bad knees and the yips. Last week, after he announced that he was stepping away from golf for a while, the media went absolutely giddy over rumors that he was on the verge of marrying skier Lindsey Vonn.
He seems to be following the Muhammad Ali trajectory, indeed. But he's, yeah, if he came back to golf and remained dominant, we'd be having a much different discussion right now.
If play hits half as well as he talks, the night of February 25th could go down as the greatest upset in ring history. We think not.
Back in 1964, as Cassius Clay, later Muhammad Ali, was promising to float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, he wasn't popular. Add in his conversion to Islam and refusal to go to Vietnam, and the country's hatred of Ali was palpable. But 30 years later in Atlanta,
visibly, you know, infirm, you know, hand shaking, lighting the torch in the 1996 Olympics, where he had been virtually public enemy number one during his prime.
Let's talk about Mike Tyson, shall we?
Yes, I love talking about Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson's the answer to so many questions.
Mike Tyson. This is my favorite part coming up right now.
For years, Tyson was the crazy guy with a facial tattoo who boasted about abusing his ex-wife, served time in prison for rape, and bit off part of Evander Holyfield's ear. Then came this scene in 2009's The Hangover.
He's now become sort of the great caricature of Mike Tyson, playing the role of Mike Tyson in a much different way. He's almost doing sort of a vaudeville routine now.
I'd like to think that we don't forgive some sports figures and hold grudges against others simply because of the color of their skin. But I'd agree with Dr. Rosen on this point, at least. These days, when sports figures fall, we all seem to enjoy it just a little too much.
We don't even care what happens on the field. We don't even care what the score is anymore. We just want to find out who acted naughty so we can go and tell the principal. It's very, very childish.
So maybe the question isn't whether Joe Paterno's statue should be restored in front of Beaver Stadium at Penn State. Maybe the question is, should we have thought harder before putting it up in the first place? Because now that we're not giving any of our sports heroes a free pass, no one is immune to scandal, even if some reputations recover more quickly than others.